This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my other co-host with a little bit of a hoarse voice, Adam Murray, so it must be that time of the year again.
It's a flashback to season one. I'm going to have the Brian Pillman season. Got a nice good 8 episodes coming. I'm just going to talk like this. Horseman, baby.
This is your new character. That's your new spring character.
This is my usual spring heel turn.
Yeah.
It's my normal heel turn.
Well, how can you turn heel? You're already a heel.
I'll just go super heel,
or you'll be like the cool heel, like the Kevin, like the NWO type cool heel, where you're the bad guy but everybody likes you.
I don't think that ever is the case.
Would that make me the plucky baby face?
Well, of course, everybody loves you.
Okay, but everybody, welcome back. We had, you know, just like the All-Star break, we had a little bit of a breather, even though everybody had their weekly episodes to chew on for us. Glad everybody's listening in. We have a little bit to talk about here with regards with the All-Star break and, of course, the trade deadline. But let's start with the All-Star break and the All-Star game that was in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. You know, obviously, the high scoring where one team almost reached the 200s with the West winning. Russell Westbrook won the All-Star Game MVP for the second year in a row because he made, like, what, 5 threes in a row at one point. So he kind of boosted his stats there. When you get a combined, you know, 300 and 350 points scored, everybody's going to have some pretty nice little performances. But was there anything in the actual All-Star Game that you kind of took notice of?
It was unwatchable. There were 140 threes taken. Mm-hmm. That's just why even bother at that point? The only one who didn't take a three was your boy Anthony Davis.
Well, you notice that Chris Paul kept feeding Anthony Davis when they were on the court together, right?
Yeah.
This is going to lend to one of my conspiracy theories, one of my 25 conspiracy theories that I have out there. And that's that I think Chris Paul is going to try to recruit Anthony Davis somehow.
How?
When they move Blake, this is just a conspiracy theory, okay? This is my X-Files moment, because, you know, the X-Files being back and being in the news for, like, what, 6 weeks. I think that they're going to try to move Blake and bring in Anthony Davis with the new cap money. With a trade, if they can convince Dell Demps to make the dumbest trade of all time.
Well, it's not really a dumb trade. You're really trading, you know, you're trading two top 15 talents, so... One's young, one's a little bit younger, but it's not like you're giving. It's not like the Pau Gasol. Oh, here's Kwame Brown and Javaris Crittenden.
Yeah,
you're really giving. You know,
like this is super. This is super duper fantasy trade here. But no, I don't know. I just noticed that when Chris Paul was out there with Anthony Davis, Anthony Davis was getting these sick alley oops. I was like, huh. Chris Paul seems to be trying to find Anthony Davis on the court a lot. And but yeah, Anthony AD had a nice performance. Russell Westbrook obviously with his game MVP. Paul George scored 41 points. He had like a record for made threes in an All-Star game.
Well, again, with that many shots being taken, how is it hard not to break some sort of record?
Well, scoring wise, for sure. And then we had the skills challenge and all the different exhibitions they have. The D League All-Star Game where Jimmer Fredette was the game MVP, and the 3-point shooting contest, which was kind of like the main event for a lot of people going into that weekend, where it was a showdown between Steph Curry and Klay Thompson again. The other finalist was Devin Booker with the Suns in a surprise, but Klay wound up winning the 3-point contest this time instead of the other way around when Curry beat Thompson. And then the one that turned out to kind of be the real fascinating, like kind of spectacular, vine-tastic event was the slam dunk contest, which turned into a showdown between Zach LaVine, as Adam Murray likes to call him, and Aaron Gordon with the Orlando Magic, who Adam is also kind of infatuated with. So what's your thought of that one?
They need to get rid of the judges. The judges completely, you know.
What do you think of Shaq saying that if you miss the first try, you automatically get a point docked off?
Well, you know, whatever his justification, at least he was even, which is like, okay, you were bad, that's horrible, but all right, that's even. But, you know, you could say that's a 50. Well, that's a 50. But, you know, Aaron Gordon's dunks were way
more creative. The recliner dunk, the butt dunk, I guess, it was just, I can't even believe he pulled that off.
Yeah, and then, the other dunk was a 52. Yeah, it was good, but you can't, it wasn't as good as the other one. So, you know, he got kind of robbed.
Is that a better dunk showdown than, like, David Thompson, Julius Erving, and Dominique Wilkins, and Michael Jordan? Just the spectacularness of it?
Well, it's only spectacular because the stuff they're doing now is so crazy.
Yeah, a between-the-legs dunk from the free throw line is ridiculous. You know?
Yeah.
Or just under. Like, that's... how. What's the distance of the free throw line? It's about, what, about 15 or 16 feet?
Something like that.
I mean, to go from about 14 feet to the rim with space, like, with room to spare, going between your legs is, like... I don't even know. What it showed in the All-Star game for me is that it's just that the athleticism in the NBA is beyond compare. Like, I've never seen so many good young athletes in the NBA at one time, ever.
Well, you can say that, and they also got lucky because, what was it, Andre Drummond and Will Barton? Will Barton was just, that might have been one of the worst, all time.
Yeah, horrible. Drummond tried to do the Nash one, but Nash kept screwing it up.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was just like, okay, we got lucky. We had two all-time great dunkers out there, but, a race of two out of two. It's not like, the three-point competition, I think, is the way that the league is going. That's the one.
Well, you saw the numbers for some of the people that didn't even get to the final round. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, there's a three-way tie at 20, and, Devin Booker, who looks like he's 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was amazed he made it to the finals, but it was just like, okay, that's crazy. They're just, draining everything. And
yeah.
But overall, it was a good,
Carl Anthony Towns winning that skills challenge as the big man.
He was trying. You could see the small guys weren't trying.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, it's fun. The big guy, no, we're trying. Except for Cousins. He was just in, particular Cousins mode.
The Knicks faced off with the Timberwolves again, where it was the second time around for Porzingis versus Towns. And the Knicks won this time. Do you see how close is it between Towns and Porzingis for the Rookie of the Year?
Not really. It's Towns's
because of the double double streak and the consistent scoring.
Well, yeah, he's just a beast. Porzingis, he has off nights and it's okay. You want to call it a tie? You want to call it 50-50 like the All-Star game? But No, Towns by far is the clear runaway Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, I also forgot to mention in Toronto the Rising Stars Challenge where Zach LaVine was the MVP of that game as well. There was a couple of kind of standouts, I guess, in that one, but that's a kind of a silly. I remember one where Andre Drummond had like 30 rebounds in one of those Rising Stars Challenge games, so it's hard to take that seriously. What is the peak for LaVine? Like, what do you think that he can be at his best?
Well, he's not a point guard. He's not going to be leading the assist race anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea what his position is. And that's so hard to tell because Minnesota is just a constant mess of we have all this young talent, but we don't know how to use them and we don't know how to get them minutes.
It's going on as we speak,
It's just, well, when is Minnesota going to make the playoffs? I'm like, I have no clue. Like, oh, well, if they get Ben Simmons, well, how does that change anything? You're still a mess.
Yeah. And Ben Simmons is going to get a lot of workout time because he might not be in the NCAA tournament at this point. So,
there's the NIT.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
NIT champions.
Oh, I would love to see him in the NIT. The last one that was the number one pick that didn't play in the tournament was Michael Thompson in Minnesota in 1978. I don't even know if there was an official Madison Square Garden NIT back then that they participated in. So it would be a first for someone to be in the NIT and go number one in the NBA draft. It'd be pretty funny, but we're talking about a totally different subject. But let's move on as we went back to NBA basketball, got back into the thick of it. There were only two games on Thursday. One was the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Chicago Bulls. Remember that first primetime ABC game on Saturday night was Bulls-Cavs. It was Tyronn Lue's first game coaching, and the Bulls sort of gave it to him, and then the shoe was on the other foot this time around. Cleveland just laid waste to the Bulls, who are still without Jimmy Butler, who's coming back from that knee injury. I do not remember the other game on that doubleheader on TNT. Do you remember what it was? It had to be a pretty forgettable game.
Probably Lakers, huh? Are unlike every other game, so why not?
I don't remember. It couldn't have been the Lakers because the Lakers had played on Friday. So I'm trying to remember who it was, and I can't even remember right now. But it wasn't really anything of like that I could remember. Oh, you know what it was? It was the Clippers and the Spurs, and the Clippers laid waste to the Spurs.
It's still forgettable.
I mean, yeah, even though the Spurs are still trying to catch the Warriors, and the Warriors didn't do themselves favors with that loss to the Blazers where they just got blown out, gave up 137 points to the Blazers. Damian Lillard couldn't miss from the three-point line. None of the Blazers could, but Lillard especially, he had 51 points. But then they bounced back with a win against those same Clippers on Saturday night on ABC on Saturday night. So things are kind of going back to normal in the NBA. A load of games on Friday. Now, this is coming off an All-Star break where for the last couple of years now, we've had All-Star breaks that last a week instead of lasting about 4 days. Do you notice a difference when teams come back from these? Because we have a very, very small sample size as we record this. It's only about been two to three days worth of games. But do you notice any difference from like maybe teams, players not getting injured as quickly coming off the All-Star break?
No, it's not that. It's good to, you know, have a – it was a nice break, I thought. To like, okay, it's a few days, I don't have to follow it. And, you know, that led to all the trade rumors. And I think it's good because that way you don't have to pull a player. You know, oh, we're going to trade him. Oh, he got injured 2 days before the trade deadline. It's a nice way to, you know, is it a little long? You know, a full week? Eh, whatever. But
does it feel like more of a reset or does it still feel like more of the same when you get back to the NBA grind, you know, the week following? Does it feel like the same teams?
Well, yeah, because now it's like, okay, now the season really starts. Now we need to start. You know, it's the difference between, like, conference play and non-conference play. It's like, yeah, we played them before. Okay, now we have the scouting reports. Now we got, what, 30 games left? So Now is our time to go 20-10.
As we speak, with like just to kind of jot down for everybody keeping up with the conference standings in the East, Cleveland's still at the top. 4 games behind is Toronto. Your Boston Celtics, 3rd in the East. Explain.
What are they a game and a half above eighth?
They are 8.5 games out of first, but they're...
Well, when we in the top two are the top two. I figure 3 through 6 are probably like a game, and then seven through ten are like a game.
There's a 3-game separation between the 3rd seed, which is Boston, and the 8th seed, which is the Chicago Bulls, which the Bulls as in the last spot is unbelievable to me.
Well, we think that might happen.
It was possible with Hoiberg, and then when Butler went down with the injury, you knew it could happen.
You know, Butler went down, then Gasol went down, and then, oh, there goes your team. Okay. Noah goes down.
And then in the West, you know, same old, 49-5 for Golden State. You know, that 5th loss came against Portland, like we just talked about. San Antonio got their 9th loss of the season against the Clippers, but they're 46-9, which is not too shabby. Oklahoma City got a loss against Indiana, but they're 40-15. The Clippers at 36-19. 10 games over 500, the Memphis Grizzlies sort of kind of stabilized themselves after a whole lot of trouble those first 2 months. And then it gets a little funky. You got the Mavericks only 2 games over 500, Portland 1 game over 500, as a surprise, mind you. And then the 500 Houston Rockets, who have been all over the news because of the trade deadline, which we'll talk about in a second. And then right behind them is the Utah Jazz. They're actually tied, but they have Houston here at the 8th spot. And then Sacramento is starting to kind of slip back. They're 4 games back of where Utah is, so they have a whole lot of ground to make up. Let's just go ahead and transition this over to the trade deadline because I just mentioned the Houston Rockets because the main centerpiece of a lot of the trade talks and a lot of the scuttlebutt on the national news wire with the trade deadline was Dwight Howard because he has the ability to opt out. He's very likely to get more than the $20 million salary that he had signed for when he went to Houston in 2013. And a lot of people felt like because of that, Daryl Morey had a liability there. He had the chance there to get rid of Dwight for some value because he was likely to not stay in Houston. Why wasn't a deal made? And if a deal were made to some of those rumored destinations like, you know, Charlotte, I remember hearing one about the Dallas Mavericks, which one would have made sense?
Any of them would have made sense. You know, there's the trade didn't get made for 2 reasons. One, Houston thought they could get anything of value for him, which was not the case.
Yeah.
They were not getting it. And 2, everyone said, we'll make a deal if Dwight will opt in. And Dwight's like, no, Yeah, I don't want to opt in. So everyone's like, screw you.
Yeah, the other one was Milwaukee that I forgot to mention. They were kind of the deepest in discussions along with Charlotte. And that fact that he could not commit for an opt-in, for like opting in or re-signing after an opt-out was a big, big hurdle that they just couldn't jump for some of these discussions. So, which does make sense to me. You don't want to rent a player.
Well, you don't want to rent a player for that much and then be like, well, we're going to lose him for nothing.
Because one part of that, I believe, with Morey is that he didn't just want the first round draft pick, which is okay. We saw a lot of draft picks get swapped around with protections on in the trade deadline, but they wanted a good young player, and good young players are hard to come by. Even though there are quite a lot of them, like we were just talking about with the All-Star game, they're hard to find if you let one go.
Well, they're not hard to find. Again, it's just, you know, Dwight Howard, everyone's like, oh, he's done, he's 30, he has back problems. It's just a case of his character continues to assassinate his talent. Mm-hmm. He's still a top two, top three center in the league.
Yes, I would say top two. I would say top two or top three. I think Drummond and Jordan are better than him right now.
Yeah, that's what I'd say, you know. Yeah. Well, no, because Jordan, I think, is too one-dimensional. I'd say Cousins, and then it would be, you could think Howard or Drummond.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about Cousins, yeah.
So I'd put him, you know, at two or 2A. But the fact is just like, well, you ran out of this place. You got this coach fired. You ran out of this place. You got that coach fired. You know, it's just like, look, we don't want to deal with you. You're talented. Well, so now it's just like, well, he has injury problems. He's at, yeah, but who doesn't have a, you know, you have, look at, you know, Tim Duncan, who's every third game now is DNP rest, DNP old. This is going to happen now. You're going to see that more and more with these young kids who came in who are now 30, early 30s, and well, they need to conserve their bodies. So it's just his character is outdoing his talent now. And unfortunately, you know, Houston, well, we want to, you know, we need to get something for him. Oh, well, he's being the person we thought he was.
Let's look at this from both sides with the non-activity. For Houston, is there any salvaging this with the regular season, keeping Dwight? Is there anything that they're going to be able to do? Say, for example, just trying to get out of those last two spots because they're still within reach of where Dallas is at the sixth spot, because the real goal here, you want to get away from playing Golden State and San Antonio. You can do that by getting the sixth seed, which is reasonable at this point. What I'm trying to say is just on the Houston side of things with keeping Dwight for the rest of the year, is there something to salvage?
I don't think there's anything salvageable versus unsalvageable. They can't tank because, as we saw at the beginning of the season, they're too dysfunctional to tank. They don't have enough coordination to be like, okay, we could be bad. It's just like, well, you know, you're a bunch of, you know, one, you know, me's, and this is what happened. You had your golden run last year where everything came up heads for you, and then, oh, well, you squandered it by being who you are. You know, Harden being who he is, Howard being who he is, and, you know, oh, let's get Ty Lawson up. He's useless.
And then we'll look at it from the other side. Now, a lot of these teams probably held back on trying to make a serious deal, like maybe the Dallas Mavericks and probably, and, you know, other teams that I could just mention, like the Memphis Grizzlies and the Indiana Pacers, like teams that could probably look at Dwight's opt-out and say, well, we could probably get him at $25 million a year, which for that percentage on that max is going to be like not 30% for sure. So it's going to be at a level where he's like one of your top players, but they'll be able to pursue him instead of having to give up a player right now and try to trade for him and try to convince him to stay there. So let's just talk about the teams that were in legitimately in the running to get him. Which teams, like, if he had been moved, would have really been a help there? Would have been like between Milwaukee, Charlotte, I don't even remember some of the other teams that were trying to get for him, but which one you think would have made a lot of sense? Like Atlanta, maybe, in a swap?
Well, any team would have benefited from him. You know, I don't know who Milwaukee would have given up for him because I don't, you know, their team is a complete mystery even to this point, but any team would have got him would easily be, I would say, probably in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think they could take out Toronto with Dwight Howard. Because the teams they're getting from aren't like, you know, you don't see Orlando trading for him. You don't see, you know, the Knicks trading for him. It was all teams that, you know, are right at the cusp. Mm-hmm. You know, Washington, oh, wow, they would have been, you know, they could have ran with them. Boston could have ran with them. Detroit could have, you know, anybody who gotten them would be, well, you know, who's going to stop him through the first two rounds?
Why did the Danny Ainge talk cool off so quickly with the Stars in the trade deadline? Is it because of the fact that he looked at the record and noticed that they probably could just do without him this year?
Well, it all came down to Atlanta. Atlanta was the key to it. Once once one team went down, I think all the trades would have been done. Everything that rumored would have been happened. But Atlanta's like, no, you know, the reports that they took Horford off at 1 p.m. and then they tried to trade Teague to the last minute and that fell through.
Another big one was that a deal. Well, the other one was the Pelicans, because they weren't doing a fire sale, but they were definitely talking to people. But what happened is they took Drew Holiday, who's sort of bounced back from his leg injury, even though he's definitely being monitored because of the chronic issues that he's had with his leg. But when he's playing, he plays well. He was taken off completely. Like, he was almost put on the untradeable list by Del Demps, the GM of the Pelicans. And then a Ryan Anderson deal just could not get done. So let's actually just start with the one you were talking about, the Hawks, and we'll kind of rapid fire this with why these people didn't get traded. Al Horford.
I have no idea.
Because he's got a deal coming up and they think they could get him in the free agency?
I have no idea. It's one of those things where Atlanta, you know, Horford and Teague both know they were tried to, you know, they legitimately tried to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go, no, we still want you. No, it's all good. We want to re-sign you.
Do you think Tiago Splitter's injury had a bit to do with it, now that they kind of have to keep him? They didn't have that backup big man?
No, I think it's a lot of it of just, you know, we've mentioned, or I have mentioned, how Budenholzer is a horrible GM to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And he has not made one right decision, and I think this is right down. Well, okay, the re-signing of Millsap is, but...
Teague, is it maybe that they don't trust Dennis Schroeder yet to run the team?
No, I think they just sort of chickened out. I think they said, no, we can recapture the Magic. We can be the number one seed again. We can make Eastern Conference Finals. Who are we? You know, we shouldn't listen to the media who says we're done and should blow up the team. Mm-hmm. We, you know, it's sort of, I'm going to bet on us. And I'm not going to say it's going to fail, but it's going to fail.
Ryan Anderson.
I have no idea why that deal wasn't made.
I thought the Kings deal would have made sense. The Rudy Gay for Ryan Anderson deal.
Any deal would have made sense. Because they're going to lose him for nothing. They're not going to keep him. He has no incentive to re-sign there, because every team is going to have tons of money. They don't have, exclusive rights to sign him, or, mm-hmm. you know, restricted free agency. He could go wherever he wants, and every team is going to have $15 million for him. So, hey, you want to come to this team that, you know, we're still rebuilding, or you want to come here where we're a solid playoff team? He's going to be gone. You got literally nothing.
He's not a max guy. You would agree? Like, he's not an $18 million a year guy, even with the new money.
No, he'll get like 14.
Yeah, I agree. Like, even with that new money, with the new percentages, I still don't see him at $18 million. Like, some people think, like, another one that I was talking about with some friends is Nick Batum. Like my friend's convinced that Nick Batum's going to get $25 million to $27 million. I just don't see it. You know, but with the new money, it's going to change our rationale of what a big contract is. You know what I'm saying? It's going to really blow our minds for about a year or two.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is the $8 million player is now the $12 million
exactly.
player.
Exactly. And maybe I'm just not coming to fruition with it, but it'll come to.
No, but Tatum's not a max player. He's just playing in the right system for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he could go chase the money, but I don't think... You know, sort of like how Fournier's flourished in Orlando. It's sort of like, well, you found a place that works for you.
And Charlotte was pretty active too, but Batum was never on the board, which means they are serious about making the playoffs this year.
Well, no, Charlotte, I think, was only active because of Kid Gilchrist injuring his same shoulder, which is never a good sign.
Shame. That's a shame. Let's talk about a pair of Kings. I mentioned Rudy Gay. Just your take on why he wasn't moved.
It's the Kings, and who knows? You could say they made a deal. Oh, they made a good deal. Well, that's the Kings. They made a bad deal. Well, that's the Kings. Well, they stayed pat. Who knows what they're doing? Who knows who's even in charge anymore?
I was shocked that Ben McLemore didn't get traded. I thought that was happening for sure, but it just never happened.
Well, I think that it was all part of the Jeff Teague. You need some dominoes to fall for things to go. And mm-hmm. everyone's like, well, I expected this to happen, and that didn't happen. And, you know, so why am I going to get this?
This one popped up because when Shelvin Mack got traded over to Utah, people thought that was just insurance. But Trey Burke.
Why didn't he get traded?
Yeah.
Price was probably too high.
And then let's go with the bigger names here. We already talked about Dwight, so that one's off the board. Hassan Whiteside. Was that injury motivated entirely, or are they serious about trying to pursue him in free agency to keep him?
Well, they're gonna try to keep him, but it's just he's a minimum contract right now. Mm-hmm. All they did was try to shed salary. You're not gonna get any talent for $1 million. So there's no one in the league that has the dollar for dollar value that he does. So why even bother?
If someone offered a decent player and a lottery pick for Whiteside, would you have taken it if you were Miami?
It was probably Whiteside and Justice Winslow. Mm-hmm. Was probably like, oh, well, we'll take, you know, we'll give you so-and-so and we'll give you, you know, a lottery pick this year. But we want, you know, a lot of the talk was probably like, well, we need Winslow too, mm-hmm. which they're not giving up. So,
yeah, that'd be dumb to do right now. Carmelo Anthony.
I told you this. There's the media is just like, oh, well, he's, you know, they're thinking trading him. He is one of six players that have a no trade clause. Mm-hmm. They can't trade him unless he's like, okay. If he said, I'm not going anywhere, so you can't trade him. You can have every deal in place you want. You could trade him for anyone you want, but it's like, nope, I'm not leaving. You can't trade him. He didn't get traded because you can't trade him unless he says, I want to trade.
And that's supposedly part of it, where they had some deal slowed out there, and Melo was like, not going to happen. You know, and you know what? He earned that right. He's a superstar. He's the best player the Knicks have still, regardless of what people think about the unicorn, Kristaps Porzingis, who's kind of crowned his new nickname. On the side here with New York Knicks, the firing of Derek Fisher, you were legitimately surprised.
Well, I'm surprised at all these firings now because they all make no sense. There's only, you know, outside of Thibodeau, And you know, well, we know Luke Walton
is going to get some offers. Yeah,
he's going to get. Yeah, he's going to be hot, but he's proven nothing. We've seen that Golden State's on autopilot.
Yeah.
So outside of Thibodeau, who's one coach that's worth
going after? They have dried that Spurs market. I mean, to the bone. I mean, Sean Marks just got the job as the GM of the Brooklyn Nets. He was like the D League guy. You know, for the Spurs organization. So, I mean, how many Spurs assistants can you hire now? I mean, Brett Brown is still there with the Philadelphia 76ers. So, you know, because that's the most consistent organization, you want to try to, you know, find somebody who kind of can represent that for their team if they want to get straight and narrow. But, you know, for the Brooklyn Nets, it sort of makes sense. But what do the Knicks do?
Well, the Knicks, oh, let's go with Kurt Rambis, who's done absolutely nothing in his tenure at Minnesota. And, you know, there's that great article about how Khan had to get $4 million in the NBA, you know, the 2011 draft to fire him, to get the money to pay, you know, yeah, which is why they had all those weird deals and weird, you know, signings. But, you know, he's shown nothing. And it's just Fisher is just, well, you know, apparently he was born to, you know, the flash of being a coach and being on the leader as opposed to actually doing stuff, which, again, doesn't speak well to Phil Jackson and his coaching tree.
And then the last one here that didn't get moved, Blake Griffin.
Well, can he not get traded because he's injured?
Well, no, you can. You can, because he was going to be coming back from his injury really, really soon. You know, he didn't come back for the Spurs game on TNT, but I have to think he'll be back in the next, what, week? I'd be surprised if he's not back in the next week.
Well, he has a suspension, so he'll be back in a few weeks. But it's probably the price was too high, and why, you know, why blow up our team? This is, you know, you have a two-year window with, you know, with them realistically, I think. Because Chris Paul is, what, 30, 31?
Is it too reactionary to move Blake Griffin because of what happened?
Well, that's just an easy way to get rid of him. It's a convenient, well, he tarnishes image. He's done nothing to it, you know. He's you know, in Gamefly commercials, Kia commercials. So it's not like he's, you know, a scumbag like a Dwight Howard, mm-hmm. who's just, you know, running
yeah,
himself
not,
out.
I would not consider Blake Griffin a coach killer. You know.
No, he's just, you know, a kid who's, you know, a little kid from Oklahoma. Oh, I'm a tough guy. No, you're from Oklahoma. It's not. No, you're not.
Yeah.
And then, okay, just made a dumb decision, got angry, whatever. You know, but it's a convenient, oh, well, now's the time to move and they're playing better without him. Well, yeah, because there's one less person scoring 30 points, so everybody gets to move the ball around a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's a lot, you know, it's addition by subtraction. That's what happens when, you know, you go from a big, you know, 4 to 3 with them.
Okay, so we were just talking about a lot of the players that weren't moved for whatever different reason, whatever different circumstances. Now, you know, in contrast, there were a few moves. The trade deadline, which was on Thursday, February 18th, not nearly as busy and frantic and otherworldly as it was last year, when it was the first time that they had had a week's worth for the All-Star break, and just everybody was going nuts about making trades. And a lot of people felt like we were going to have deja vu, but it didn't really happen this year. But, you know, I do think, Adam, we've got enough of a small enough sample size to where we could probably just go real time with these trades and just kind of discuss them. So you ready to go?
Sure.
The biggest one probably of them all was one of the first ones. It was Brandon Jennings and Ersan Ilyasova getting traded from the Detroit Pistons for Tobias Harris, who was a very nice piece that the Orlando Magic signed at about a $60 million clip over 4 years in Orlando. And then they traded him away. Do you have like a winner here, or I mean, how did you see this trade? Because for this one kind of confused me on the side of Orlando.
I don't get, well, obviously for Orlando, I can see it's, well, we need to move Gordon in, and we have Hazanja, and we sort of have a backlog. Let's get, you know, who's the one who doesn't fit.
I think you can tell Tobias Harris. You're the one that predicted. Sorry to cut you out, but you're the one that predicted that with the. I think in the offseason you said that there was a big log jam. Somebody's got to go. I think that was your exact words.
And yeah, he has to go because he didn't really fit. And, you know, well, and then it's funny, you read like the trade recaps. It was like, oh, he's 23, but he's having a down year. It's like, well, no, because he's constantly out of position and there's really no offensive set going on for him. And
was Vucevic essentially in his spot?
Well, he's not a center.
You're right. I mean, Vucevic is kind of at a point now where the center position is so small that he can get away with playing it. You know, with Fry being moved, which we'll talk about in a second, it kind of changes things. But
well, you have him, Channing Fry. You have Gordon. You have his Andre, who can play big. You know, he's 6'8", so if you need to play, you know, as a big three, you can. So he didn't really fit into where they were trying to go. And especially, like, you know, Oladipo, they're trying to play him at point guard, and they're playing him at small forward. So they're just moving everybody around, and he, you know, just watching the games, like, well, he didn't really fit in there. But the fact they didn't get really anything for him, Ilyasova's, he's a better upgrade than Fry.
He's still pretty young. You know, it's the same advantage Nick Batum has with his contract coming up that we were just talking about, is that so Ilyasova came in out of Turkey very, very young. I think, what is his age right now, about 26? I want to say.
No, he's been in the league for a while.
He has been in the league for a while, but he came in at like 19.
I think he's 29.
Okay, but that's, you know, for him being a shooter, you know, it's not the worst deal to bring him in. You know, bringing in Jennings to me doesn't make much sense because he's not going to be sticking around probably.
Well, you don't know. You might be able to get him cheap, and right now he's an upgrade over Payton, who still can't shoot. And
you know what's weird? Alfred Payton is almost almost Brandon Jennings 2.0.
It's funny, as much of a darling he was last year, this year it's all worn off. Mm-hmm. He's been benched. You've had Oladipo play point for him. You've had his minutes cut. You've had his minutes grow. It's just, well, you know, he hasn't developed between year one and year two. There's no progression I haven't seen.
How does it work out for Detroit with Harris? I mean, I think it's a great fit opposite of DeAndre Drummond and, you know, along with Marcus Morris, who's kind of a shooting big anyway.
I don't know if it'll work this year because you have a short time to try to figure it all out, but next year they're going to be dangerous. Mm-hmm. I you know, the fact that Orlando didn't even get a pick for him.
Yeah.
And they, you know, Detroit gave a pick for Monte Yunus in Houston.
And if they drop out of the playoffs, you're in the lottery again, you know, got a better chance of getting a decent player, regardless of how bad the draft is. Stanley Johnson's played well. You can imagine, you have to think that maybe his second or third year he'll play better. And then Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, not too bad. You know, very, very young team in Detroit.
Yeah, that's the point. What good is your pick to if you have, you know, that's the thing. It's like Orlando and Minnesota doesn't know what they're doing, but Philly, let's keep stockpiling draft picks. Well, you already look at Orlando. They have a ton of draft picks. You have people with talent, but you need more draft picks because you're still in the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Now, so, you say that Detroit didn't give up the pick there, but they did give up the pick in a trade with the Houston Rockets where they got Denonis Monte-Yunus, who also has some youth on his side, and then Marcus Thornton, who's a gunner, in exchange for Joel Anthony. and that first round pick, which is protected. I'm not sure what level of protection it is, so there's a good chance that it might just come right back, and it was just a salary dump for Houston. But can Monte Yunus do anything for Detroit?
I don't know. He's been inconsistent. We've been waiting for him to do something, either him or Terrence Jones. But he's been sort of battling the injury bug this year. Whether I think it's either foot or back problems, one of the two. But, mm-hmm. you know, he's talented. He's young. He's a big. That provides depth. They have no depth behind Drummond. Like, who else does Detroit have besides him and Morris, really? Who's their backups? Joel Anthony didn't play.
Yeah, Anthony's been gone. I'm trying to think out loud who they might have that has like the backup skills there, but
they just played small.
Yeah, they had Aaron Gray, but Aaron Gray retired. And they do a lot of now. To their credit, Stanley Johnson and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, they're really taller guards. Like they can play the guard spot in a ways, but they're a lot taller. And then Reggie Jackson's really small. You know, and now you don't have to play Jennings. You don't have that. Will Jennings play behind Reggie Jackson? Can they play behind? You don't have that dilemma anymore. So that sort of frees up Reggie Jackson to kind of play maybe the way he played early in the season, because he played lights out in November and December. And maybe they think that getting rid of Jennings will sort of free his mind a little bit, you know, give him a little sense of security.
Well, he should have the security because he got the contract and it was his team. But, you know, the fact that you trade Jennings for Harris, that's a major coup to pull off.
Mm-hmm. And then there, that same day, they had the other major deal, which was a three-way deal involving the Charlotte Hornets, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat got Brian Roberts. The Memphis Grizzlies got Chris Anderson and two second-round picks. And then they also got, I think, another pair of second-round picks from the Charlotte Hornets. Am I correct?
Miami, it's just they're probably all so protected. They're all probably all top 55 protected.
Well, they're second round picks too.
They'll never see them. It was just all, we don't want to pay the repeater tax, so we need to get rid of everybody who's everything is not nailed down.
Yeah, and then PJ Harrison was traded in this whole deal. Which team did Harrison wind up with?
He ended up with Memphis. With, you know, it's funny, him and, you know, it's like, well, he just seems like a Lance Stephenson light. And then they both go to Memphis again.
Well,
back up again.
Well, Harrison will help along with Chalmers, you know, who got moved over there earlier in the year. Harrison might help him out with the 3-point shooting, which is
but he was kind of shooting horrible this year. But I think it might just be a Charlotte thing.
Yeah, the centerpiece was Courtney Lee going to the Charlotte Hornets. So, and you, like you said, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist injury had a little bit to do with it. They wanted some 3-and-D. He's not a great 3-and-D, but he's a decent shooter.
He's a 3, but he's not a D.
Is he still averaging double-digit points this season?
On Memphis,
like,
I don't know if anybody's at double-digit points in Memphis.
last year he was like just at 10. You know what I'm saying? So, like, he was like a great fifth starter, you know? But then, let me see here for Courtney Lee. It's modest numbers, mind you, but what kind of value can he provide there for the Charlotte Hornets?
Well, that's just we need to make the playoffs. We need to show that we care, because, you know, last year they had such expectations and then it all sort of fell as a team sort of came down to earth and everything didn't really go too well. And, you know, we mentioned how good Batum has been and how he's fit. It's just, okay, you know, Gilchrist goes out. All right, well, we need somebody who can shoot, so.
Yeah, he is exactly at 10.0 points per game. So right on the money there. And then we had the trade deadline on the Thursday, and that's where the deals got moved. One of them that was not a shock at all was Markieff Morris. The only question was where. He wound up with the Washington Wizards in exchange for a protected first-round pick in 2016, along with Chris Humphries and DeJuan Blair.
Was it protected? I thought it was unprotected.
It says here protected.
Okay, then that's a better, you know, I thought it was unprotected. I was like, you know, he's a better thing you could probably get at 10. Because it'll probably be, you know, 10, 11, 12 in the lottery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Morris is better. And, you know, so much for the Wizards need to, you know, abandon the slow pace.
Here's what I don't understand, though, about Markieff Morris is that he was unhappy with the fact that the Suns traded his twin brother. And Marcus is in Detroit, you know, the team we were just talking about. But Markieff goes to Washington. It wasn't like, okay, we're just going to trade you to the Grizzlies, to the Pistons, too. It's not going to work that way. But is he going to be any happier in Washington?
Well, you could say, at first I was like, yeah, you know, screw him. But once we, you know, now that we sort of take the looking glass back to to Phoenix, that whole team was a mess. I don't think it was just him pouting.
They're on 10. I think they're on 10 losses in a row now.
Because, yeah, they're, you know, it's funny. It's like, oh, Brooklyn's pick is going to be huge. Like, not really.
Did you see the clip of Markieff Morris leaving the Suns arena on a hoverboard?
No, but I'm not surprised.
I was like, yeah, typical dickhead move right there.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, again, you know, Phoenix, there was something seriously wrong out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, Phoenix is just trying to lose as much as they can right now.
Yeah.
Because it's between them, the Lakers, and Philly. You know, the sad thing is Brooklyn is no longer the worst team in the league by far.
But for Washington, I feel like if Markieff can really pin himself down as a big man, get back to like maybe like 14 points and 7 rebounds, I think that can really help out Washington. I'm not saying he's the missing piece, but I think he's a guy that can push them back into the playoff race. Would you agree?
Well, it's not that he's a missing piece, but, you know, he's pouty. But I think once you have, you know, John Wall, you know, sending you lobs, it's a little different than, well, here's two shooters who just want to shoot, mm-hmm. who are the exact same player. Oh, we got rid of them. Here's two more people who are the exact same player and just want to shoot.
Small trade here, and that really signified nothing. The Pelicans got Jarnell Stokes from the Heat in exchange for a future second-round pick. They immediately waived Jarnell Stokes. This one was a little major. The Memphis Grizzlies were they were busy all over the place, but here they traded Jeff Green, who was like a very valuable player for them, whether he was starting or off the bench. He was traded to the Clippers for Lance Stephenson. I know I sound like a fanboy here, you know, for anyone who listens to the podcast, I am a Lance Stephenson fan, but I think Lance going to Memphis makes sense.
Well, he's you know, he hasn't done too well in his last two stops, so it's sort of just well.
He's just a better offensive version of Tony Allen to me.
And he's not really doing the offensive thing much either. This trade, you know, this was the one, it actually came in after the deadline. There was really no rumors about it. It just sort of happened.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really make much sense, Jeff. Maybe it's just, you know, Doc was like, oh, I know Jeff Green. I can get the best out of him.
Well, Jeff Green's in the last year of his deal, too. And, I mean, I don't know how likely it was that he was going to re-sign with Memphis.
Memphis wanted to get rid of him.
They did want to get rid of him, but they do hold on to their older players. So there was a chance, you know, him being in his early 30s that, or maybe his late 20s, I think he is, that they were going to be able to just kind of convince themselves, well, let's just give him a couple more years, you know?
No, everything I read was they wanted him out. The Stephenson, the Clippers didn't work as you thought. You know, you thought he might be sixth man of the year. That didn't really work. So it's just like, well, I'll trade my damaged goods for your damaged goods.
Now Jeff Green worked as a sixth man in Memphis, but is he going to be a sixth man in LA at all?
Who knows? No, he'll be starting for now until the playoffs come when you need Pearson.
Because your sixth man is Jam, you know.
Oh, you know, it's he provides a body. He can play the four if needed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, well, we can get somebody on Draymond.
Is this prototypical playoff help move?
Yeah.
Like when Cleveland got Anton Jameson all those years ago?
Yeah, it's just, well, you know, the trade deadline was obviously a disaster and, you know, just disappointment and everything. Everybody's just waiting for the buyouts to come and that's where the big names are going to move. But yeah, this is just we need a body. This is an upgrade to Stephenson. We don't see him being in the rotation in the future. So let's get somebody I know personally, and I think I know how to use him.
Then we had the Nuggets getting or trading Randy Foy to the Oklahoma City Thunder in exchange for Steve Novak, who they already moved, DJ Augustin, and two future second-round picks. For the Nuggets, it's inconsequential. They're not in the playoff race as we speak, to be honest with you. Augustin is a small guard like Foy, probably not as good offensively as Foy is. So I think on the side of Oklahoma City, this was something where they wanted to make this move instead of the Nuggets wanting to make the move. But do you like it for the Thunder? It kind of gives them a pretty decent point guard, or even a third point guard if you want Cameron Payne to get more minutes and be the backup to Russell Westbrook, who's had a friendship with Cameron Payne.
Well, it is an upgrade a little bit. You know, Augustine, he had that one good season like 2 years ago, and that sort of, you know, put his name back on the map. But maybe, like, well, we need him as more of a teacher. He might be a better mentor than Foy might be. Foy might have been that, you know, part of that, the last remnants of the Ty Lawson,
the millennial movement, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying Augustin's younger, but he might be more of a position to help Moutier as opposed to Foy is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So who knows? You know, it works better. You know, it says, obviously, yet another vote of confidence for Deion Waiters in Oklahoma City if you're getting more guards when you have him right there doing nothing.
And then for playoff teams that made moves, very, very minuscule. In fact, one of them was a minus altogether, even though it was predictable. The Celtics, after trying desperately to trade that last year for David Lee, could not make the move. And then when, you know, the money was spent, they waived him. How was the David Lee era in Boston?
Well, there was just no – he didn't really fit. You know, I was like, well, that's great. Because everyone's like, well, oh, he has no value. Why'd you him? Because Gerald Wallace did have value.
You got rid of Gerald Wallace's contract, which is a plus.
You know, you got rid of Gerald Wallace for David Lee. It's swapping A for B. And if he had something left in the tank, and he might have had something left in the tank, it was just, well, we're going with our young guys. And, you know, Brad went with Olynyk. He relied heavily on Olynyk towards the end. It was just like, well, there's no room for him if you have him and Sullinger playing, you know, the bulk of the minutes. You know, Tyler Zeller last year was one of their most efficient players. Mm-hmm. He had been getting DNPs for most of the season until like a couple weeks ago.
They have a lot of depth on that team. I think that lends to why they've gained so much in the Eastern Conference. They've just had consistency because of the depth of their roster and being able to go to different people. But obviously, you and I both know their biggest hole is the fact they do not have a superstar. They do not have a – like Isaiah Thomas is their go-to guy. He's their all-star. But is he a guy you can rely on in the clutch is the problem. And we'll see there when we get to there. We're jumping ahead. But speaking of other playoff teams in the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers, there was so much talk about Kevin Love. I didn't even talk about him in the non-move section because I knew that wasn't going to happen. And then they had some other people where they talk about Iman Shumpert maybe going to the Pelicans. I heard one. It didn't happen. And then they finally made a move, which was getting Channing Frye from the Orlando Magic, which gives them a stretch five. You know, a lot of people – the word was out that – Cleveland and LeBron and whoever runs that team, which is probably LeBron, wanted shooters, and they got Channing Frye. Did they get the right shooter?
I don't get it. Everyone loves this trade except for me. Everyone's like, this is an A-plus for Cleveland. Wow, they got the shooter they needed. Where is he going to play? LeBron plays four in the playoffs.
I agree with you. It's pretty stacked there at the five with Mozgov and Thompson and Love, you know.
And LeBron.
And wasn't Love essentially a stretch five anyway?
Yeah.
You know?
So you're going to have two stretch fives. Who's going to be rebounding for your team? You better hope you hit 60% of your shots because you're just going to be one and done every time down. You're not getting any offensive rebounds with that team.
Yeah.
With Channing Frye. He's not the rebounding beast. And like, I don't see where he fits. Where is he going to get all his minutes?
And Frye's contract's not the worst contract ever, so that kind of made sense for them to gain it. But they did have to shed just a little bit of cap space because they're so loaded from all the signings they made in the summer. So they sent off Anderson Varejao, who was immediately cut by Portland. Rumors already out there that Varejao's going to go to the Golden State Warriors. But Varejao and then Jarrett Cunningham. So the Andy era in Cleveland is over. What was it like there for Varejao in Cleveland? I mean, let's just go all the way from the beginning when he was drafted back in, what was it, like 04, 05. What was Anderson Varejao for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Beloved, but yet injured after 30 games every season.
Why was he beloved, though? Was it the hard – did he play hard, or was he a legitimately good player? Or was he an overrated player in the years where LeBron was just stacking up 60-win seasons in Cleveland, but he was literally doing it by himself?
No, I thought he was good. It was just he was never healthy ever, mm-hmm. ever. And that's, you know, unfortunately, well, you give him the contract because, well, you gave him that deal because LeBron wanted him. He's like, no, keep him. So you give him this deal, and then, okay, we'll trade him to Portland. And then Portland's like, yeah, we'll just cut him and we'll stretch provision his last contract the last year. So.
Which is becoming popular now, the stretch provision.
Which, you know, I had said that's going to start happening is people, they're not going to care anymore. It's like, oh, we'll sign it.
Because you got that expanded cap and blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Yeah. What's $3 million for 3 years if, you know, we gain 20
yeah.
every year?
Especially if it's one of those percentage laden things where if it kicks in on the new cap, then you're in trouble. You know, you don't want, I mean, it's not like, that's not what Varejao's contract was, but I'm talking about, you know, when the future contracts come up, it's going to be harder to stretch provision those deals. But for these deals, yes, it makes sense to do it now.
Yeah, it's gonna be like NFL where every team's gonna have dead money and.
Oh God! Did you see the St. Louis Rams? They cut like what Chris Long and James Laurinaitis. Like these guys are like legit good players in their late 20s, and they're gone. They owed them like $23 million. Oh, gone. You know, I do not understand NFL salary cap, like the front end stuff, and it's so opposite to baseball where once you sign a guy, you're stuck with them, but it's okay because the revenue sharing works it out because there's no cap. The NBA is square in the middle. It's like in that danger zone where you could either really really screw yourself by overspending, or there's some kind of a trick to get out of this one contract, but you can't get out of this other contract. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they sort of curtail that by saying, you know, no more 7-year deals. We're doing only 4 to 5 year deals now. So if you screw yourself, you have a chance in a couple years, as opposed to, well, yeah, you bought it, you buy it.
That brings me to one point. I'm glad you mentioned it because Adam Silver does his annual press conference for the All-Star weekend. The commissioner always has, you know, David Stern did it also, but it was Adam Silver, you know, who's obviously the commissioner of the NBA now. He's a real, I mean, you and I both agree, Adam Silver, incredibly smart guy. Between the three main commissioners, or maybe the four if you want to count Gary Bettman with the NHL, you got Bettman, you got Rob Manfred, and you got Roger Goodell, who's a freaking, no comment. But I think...
Well, all three of those are horrible.
Yeah, but Silver's incredibly smart. You know,
you could say, well, he's lucky because he's smart, but you have Goodell, enough said, you have Bettman, who is, you know...
He just got
horrible.
An extension, I believe.
Yeah, it's like, well, no. Hockey's still going to work in Phoenix where it hasn't worked. And then you have baseball. It's like, no, there's no steroids. We don't need to test. Just trust me. There's no steroids. You know, so every replay, we don't know. No, we don't need replay.
Well, a lot of these guys are successors still in their day. I mean, Goodell is still, in my eyes, succeeding Tagliabue. Manfred just got that job recently from Bud Selig. Bettman is not the successor. Silver is, and he answered all the right questions. He talked about the D-League salary system that they might have to update, you know, so that they could try to add a roster spot to NBA teams without penalty, which is a really smart idea. They talked about other things that they wanted to do and that we had talked about in previous episodes, like proposals. But the one thing that really bugged me about the Adam Silver thing is that when it came to the most important question, which is the fact that they weren't able to negotiate a stutter process for the cap increase with the Players Association, which allows the salary cap to balloon to $89 million in the upcoming season. It goes to like $96 million in the following offseason in 2017. The question, I think J.A. Adonde for ESPN was the one that delivered the question, asked, well, what's going to be the consequences of this? Because this was something that y'all were trying to avoid in the last CBA negotiations. And what Silver said was, and I had no problem with this part of the answer, he said, well, there was a lot of things we were trying to accomplish in the CBA that did not necessarily get completely done. And that's true. But when really bugged me is that his answer about the ballooning of the salary cap was, I don't know what's going to happen. What the fuck you mean you don't know what's going to happen? This is like the most important free agency session in the NBA in the last 15 years, and you don't know what the fuck's going to happen?
Well, he doesn't. Do you know what's going to happen?
Well,
I
can
tell
you,
Kevin,
if you play by the percentages of max with 30% to 27% and incentives with you know, the 80-20 rule, you know what's – I mean, you know what the money is going to be. You know what the numbers are going to be.
He's not talking numbers. He's talking, do you know where Kevin Durant's going to go? Could you predict, you know, 5 years ago, you will have 3-star players who say, I don't want a max deal. I want to make 2/3 of a max deal to play with my friends.
Well, that was the example that Adonde used, that, well, the Warriors have enough cap space next year to get Kevin Durant.
Yeah, and that's the you can predict if, you know, Durant says, I want to play with them and be this unstoppable team. And that's going to lead to, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road, you're going to have owners like in Philly and Orlando going, well, we can't compete, so we want to get rid of this CBA. We're going to lock them out again because this is not fair for competition if players are going to do what they want again.
Here's what makes me laugh, though, about that. And I think even Adam Silver is not envisioning this, is that, you know, they talk about that example. Let me just use this one example. The Warriors could get Kevin Durant for like $25 million on that, on the new salary cap because of the new money. That would open up for them in this offseason, which is true. But what happens when Steph Curry comes up in 2017? He gets $35 million. What happens when Klay Thompson's contract comes up in 2018 or 19? He's getting another $20 million. Where's the money now? How much money are you going over the tax now?
Well, how much does the cap go up? And, you know, again, you have Steph Curry. He has a $300 million Adidas deal or Under Armour deal. He could say, I want to play for the minimum because I'm already making $300 million. You know, I have my endorsement deals. What do I need?
With Steph Curry, I think he's so bitter about the extension he got in 2012 that he will demand to get the most. I think he'll pull off the same deal LeBron did in his negotiations with the Heat when he said, I am tired of taking less. I'm tired of being the not being the highest paid player. I want everything.
And well, I don't know what's going to happen. We didn't expect players to play with their friends. We expected them to say, okay, we're all going to go to the highest bidder and we'll have, people move around.
But the point here is, couldn't Silver just try to have some sort of description of what he thinks might happen, or he just doesn't want to show his cards?
Well, I don't think he wants to show his cards because I think, you know, that's part of the new, you know, they have to renew. The opt-out deal is what, next year, after next year?
What's that?
The opt-out of the CBA is after next year?
Yeah, it's. I think it's. I think it's this either this one or the next one in 2017.
Yeah, so it's 2017. Somebody's going to opt out. Mm-hmm. So I think. Well, I can't say anything because I know the owners are definitely going to want to opt out. It's already, you could see it from a mile away.
Yeah, but the owners are the ones that already blew up the checkbook last summer because they're anticipating this new money. So it's almost like the owners already know before the Silver does. But at the end of the day, and just like Roger Goodell continuously exposes with his own stupidity, the commissioner is the owner's mouthpiece.
Exactly. That's why you can't say much. That's why I can't say, well, I didn't expect.
Maybe I'm just disappointed because this was the first like moment of weakness that I noticed out of Silver. You know, because this is one of the first ever unanswerable questions for the NBA under Silver's tenure.
Because, again, this never happened where you had a league who now is free money and whoever wants to spend it can. Mm-hmm. So if you have this dominant team, I don't want to go see, you know, any NBA game where, oh, they're going to be mediocre, you know. You could go see, I'm going to say, you know, an SEC school, or you could go down to, I don't even know where the University of New Orleans is.
It's in New Orleans.
No, what conference?
Oh, they are now in the Southland.
Yeah, you want to go see a Southland game? You want to go see the Raging Cajuns play in
the Sun Belt? Yeah,
the Sun Belt. Yeah. Do you want to see SEC, which only there'll be like two or three teams, or do you want to go see, you know, the 75% of the league will all be Sun Belt action because we have, here's our superstar. Mm-hmm. Yay, and well, we know we can't beat this team for 3 years. So,
but like you already said in one of the previous episode, look at the schedule for the ABC primetime schedule. How many teams are in that schedule? It's about eight.
It's maybe the same. Seven? Like I think it's like six teams. They have four games each, and like one, you know, like the Clippers or
Clippers, Cavs, Thunder, Clippers, Warriors, Spurs, Bulls, and then there was a seventh team that I can't remember.
Well, I get Thunder. It. You know, you market your stars, but what's going to happen if Durant leaves? Well, you know, we know Oklahoma City is pretty much done. Mm-hmm. They're not an elite team. They'll be a playoff team. But, you know, it's going to be, oh, do you want to go see Damian Lillard and garbage? Or here's Orlando's coming to town. Or here's Memphis who has nobody left. And that's part of the consequences is how are you going to tell your owners you need to fill the arena? You know, the only way you're making money, you know, you see empty seats. People aren't going to go and they're not going to keep going if you have garbage teams playing garbage teams.
Mm-hmm. Kirk Heinrich, can he ever play for another team except for the Hawks, the Bulls, or the Wizards? Is it a rule?
It's just, you know, the three teams know him. It's like, oh, we'll take him this. It's like they're all stepdads. Oh, we'll take him this year. Come over here.
Can he do anything for the Hawks?
No, he's just Dennis Schroeder teaching experience.
Pretty much. But it's not like they put him over the top. It's not like a tipping point for Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? But here's the thing, you know, and we'll try to round this out with the trade deadline. The one move that got made that you'll say, huh, that actually worked out. Like, in the postseason, we're going to watch and say, that was actually a pretty good move. Like, last year was probably the Corey Brewer move. Which one is it going to be this year?
Easy guess would be the Tobias Harris if they make the playoffs.
I think it's going to be Chris Anderson going to the Grizzlies.
Well, that's just the Gasol is out, so we need a big body because who's there?
It gives him that extra big to give him some rest.
No, who was their backup big? Brandon Wright. He's out for the year with surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So they literally, who was his backup?
Yeah. Potentially Markieff Morris with the Wizards.
Big Morris could be if they make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they were all minor moves that didn't matter because everyone was waiting for Atlanta to do their move. And last year, it was crazy because one team upgraded. So everybody else is like, oh, we need to do something now. This year, well, nobody else did anything, so why are we going to change our team?
Which is true. And also, don't you notice that shooters are like the new closers? You know how in the baseball trade deadline, all these playoff teams and wildcard teams are like, okay, we need a closer. Our closer's not getting it done. He's losing. He's dropping games. We need one. So they throw in like all these different prospects or whatever so they can get a closer. Why is it that shooters are now the new like must have in the trade deadline? Is it just because the NBA has turned that way with the shooting?
Pretty much, and that's all it comes down to, is everybody's just taking threes towards the end anyways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think a lot this year, especially the Western Conference teams, they know it's going to be San Antonio and Golden State in the finals. So why are you going to pay for a rental when you know it's going to be those two?
Is it that sure to you that it's going to be those two?
Unless you're Oklahoma City and the Clippers, who else do you think is legitimately talking themselves going, yeah, we can make it to the finals. We can beat both Oklahoma City in the first round, and then we could beat San Antonio in the second round.
Houston.
Well, they're also dysfunctional.
They are dysfunctional. You're right.
But how many teams, you know, front offices legitimately think like, oh, we got a shot, we can do it?
Probably none of them.
That's why. So why rent? Why blow up your team? Why give up future anything if you're just like, look, this year's a lost cause. We can't do it. Let's wait to the off season. I expect a lot of trades to be made by the draft. Draft is going to be crazy.
Give me one prediction for player that will be waived. That might be like a helper down the road before the postseason starts. Mine is Eric Gordon with the Pelicans. I think he will be gone.
You think they're going to waive him?
Yes. I think they'll stretch it or whatever they got to do with that last remaining bit and just say, you know what, let's cut our losses here. The Eric Gordon era is over.
Well, he's an expiring deal, so there's no stretch. It's just a straight buyout.
Yeah, just like, let's get rid of him, yeah.
Well, I don't think anybody, because they would have been bought out yet so far.
Yeah, Rhino's not going to get bought out, obviously.
I think, you know, it might be someone who's playing in China right now. I don't know who's out there, but there's always a name.
Like an Andre Blotch or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who wasn't terrible here. It's just he had a head case.
No, I think he hit a referee in one of those games in China.
Oh, he threw his...
like his headband?
Threw his headband out one.
He threw his headband at the referee.
Yeah, so it's just like one of those, you know, you have your head case problem.
Okay, let's split this one up here to finish it off. Winner that made a move.
Who's the big winner? Detroit. If not this year, next, you know, they got those play, you know, they're going to re-sign, you know, Drummond, obviously. So that young core is all intact for 4 years, 3 years.
Who is a winner by not making a move?
You could say Boston.
Well, the Clippers did make a move, so they don't count. Yeah.
Boston, I guess. You can't say San Antonio or Golden State because, well, they're can't get any better than what you are.
Man, I want to say, to be local again, I want to say the Pelicans because I know Dell Demps would have made a dumb move.
No. They are the big losers in my book because you're losing Anderson for nothing. You don't even get a prospect for him.
So they would go in the section of losers that didn't make a move.
They are part of the big losers overall, period, because unless they re-sign Anderson, unless they know something that we don't, if they get Anderson, okay, but you got rid of nothing. You have, who is there, you know, besides Anthony Davis, who is the young people on the team? Who is their young prospect?
They have none because they traded all their draft picks.
You have nobody on your team as a prospect. You have nobody at the end of the bench who's, you know, like, oh, we're going to, you know, a couple years he might be something. We're sort of redshirting him. You have nobody, and they got literally nothing for Ryan Anderson. You couldn't even, you know, you couldn't even get, you know, some sort of, well, he was a first round pick and he had a bad season. He didn't fit. Like we say, Vonleh, he's terrible, mm-hmm. but he got that chance to get out
well,
of Charlotte.
And they're not making the playoffs anyway. So it was almost like they were trying to bait the Pelicans into a fire sale. And I'm kind of glad they didn't, you know, but.
Yeah, whatever. But you get nothing. There's no young prospects to develop.
Yeah, they never. I don't think they got a draft pick out of any of those deals, those smaller deals that they made involving, you know, the one that involving Jarnell Stokes.
Nothing,
and all those.
You have nothing to build on. Mm-hmm. You can't say, well, we got a second round pick. We got no. You literally have nothing. You have the exact same team you had last week, which has been god awful for 2-3 years.
Is that even worse than the Kings not being able to move Gay or McLemore or anybody like?
Yeah, because the Gay, you know, the Kings, McLemore is just. You know, I think he's just a product of the Sacramento dysfunction and might be better elsewhere because he's also super young. I think he's 20.
Yeah, he's very young.
So, you know, would you rather have like a 22-year-old senior in the draft or would you rather have Ben McLemore 2 years of I know how to condition my body?
And then there's the Raptors.
The Raptors, you know, no fault of theirs because they tried. I heard everywhere it was the Knicks pick and Scola. So unless, you know... I think everyone just sort of, once Atlanta shut down, everyone said, nope, we can't do it. Our price is too high. You're going to give us two picks?
Will the Raptors look back, if they get bounced again in the first round, will they look back at this trade alliance and Masai Ujiri and say, man, I should have made a move?
No, because, you know, last year they didn't. Last year there was no, you know, like I said, I heard no talk of Toronto being active, Toronto seeking people, just like, no, we're good. This year they went out. I think, what's the point of making a small deal to make a small deal? Mm-hmm. What's the point of saying, well, I'm going to swap my garbage 10th player for your garbage 10th
player? Well, that's the contagiousness of the trade deadline. Everybody wants to make a move because somebody else is making a move.
You know, well, okay, Shelvin Mack, is he going to put anybody over the top anywhere ever?
No, but it gives the Jazz, and maybe that's one of the smaller ones that helped them, is that it gives the Jazz just a little bit of insurance at the guard spot where they've just been in a lot of trouble because of the Exum injury and the fact that they never really had a lead guard and Trey Burke never developed into one. So I actually kind of like that one for Utah.
You know, but again, you have your starting five intact. You have so what good does – you could probably say – maybe they pick somebody up on, you know, an who got cut.
Give me a loser that made a deal, like one where they swung a little bit.
Well, the biggest losers overall were Orlando and Atlanta, mm-hmm. and they both made deals. So
yeah, Atlanta made one, but they didn't make the big ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and as we know how finicky NBA players are, you're gonna say, look, you actively traded me, but no, it's cool. He knows he's got in the offseason.
Yeah.
So what effort, you know, what is he going to put in now? Be like, look, you guys suck. You guys don't try to talk how you love me. You're my coach and my GM. You can't say, no, the GM, I fought for you. They were trying to trade you. I said, no, I want you.
It's easy to kind of create that divide where the coach says, well, it wasn't me, it was him. When the coach is the GM, you can't say that. You know,
yeah,
and
exactly.
We talked about this before. Yeah, that's the guy in the foxhole with you, and that's the guy trying to move you.
So you're the floor general. You're the one leading everyone down, and your coach has zero confidence in you because he tried to get rid of you because he wants to go with the youth movement.
Yeah, it depends on your, you know, your self-reliance and your self-confidence as a player and whether or not you could just play through that because you're a professional. But let's be honest, how many of these star NBA players really are professional?
Also, Orlando might be a loser, but, you know, the talk now is Orlando's going to go hard for Horford like they went for Millsap last
that
year.
That I heard. I heard that Horford is going to be the subject of a big push from Orlando.
And Millsap, he said it was hard, and that was like a last-second decision to stay. And only after he stayed did they re-sign Harris.
But here's the funny part. Isn't Al Horford just an older version of Tobias Harris?
Yeah, but Tobias Harris is just potential right now.
Yeah.
And he's like Derek Favors where – all right, we get it. You're scoring double-doubles, but you haven't put it together, and we don't know if you might because you've been here 5 years, and You had all the time to shine in you know, in Orlando with nothing going on. Well, you had Jock Vaughn, so that...
Yeah, and you got Scott Skiles there, and that has a little bit of influence. You got a coach that you finally, you know, is winning some games, so you have some confidence him to, you know, convince the GM there to make some moves. And
yeah, but he wasn't part of Skiles' rotation towards the end, and it wasn't part of Skiles' future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I got moved, because he didn't fit in Skiles' system.
That's what I'm saying. Scott Skiles got in his ear and said, okay, this guy we couldn't be able to move, because even though he's got a decent contract and he's young, maybe we can get some value here and try to find something in the draft and move Aaron Gordon up a little bit.
The only thing, you know, is might be worried is this: there might be an Ilya Sova curse.
Mm-hmm.
We will find out in a few weeks.
Explain the Ilya Sova curse.
Milwaukee dumped him so they could get Monroe. They started tanking immediately. Detroit got way better.
Mm-hmm.
If Detroit tanks Ilya Sova and Orlando starts playing well and Detroit starts tanking...
Well, remember, Ilya Sova, I believe, played under Skiles in Milwaukee. Am I correct?
Yep.
That was kind of where he got his start, so maybe they'll have a little bit of a rekindling.
So, again, you know, it's one of those, I know these guys. I know, you know, these guys fit my system. They can teach my system to all of these young minds who don't know anything yet.
Exactly.
Because... you know, as we've seen, Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine, Levine, as great as they are in dunk contests, they don't know how to play. They don't, you know, they haven't figured anything out yet, so.
All right, and so we're going to be wrapping this up, and we'll just talk a little bit about some of the games. Let's go with Monday. Pacers at Heat. You remember when that was important? The Pistons go to Cleveland to play the Cavaliers. Warriors at Hawks. You remember last year when this was like the biggest regular season game ever?
Yeah, times change.
Now, these times have changed, at least for one team. The Celtics go to Minnesota to play the Timberwolves. Tuesday here on the 23rd, you've got the Rockets at the Jazz, who are both kind of fighting it out in those last spots. That's the only
Stop game. Just picking horrible games. Is there anything worth watching, period? Don't just always the Timberwolves and the Rockets. No. Is there any game worth watching?
I'm trying to help you with some of these Celtics games. You're like... Mid pass.
Well, I'm going to watch him anyways.
ESPN doubleheader on Wednesday is Wizards at Bulls and Spurs at Kings? My God, the Kings are on national television.
Yeah, both those games, you know. Remember when that Bulls, you know, Wizards rivalry meant something? Oh, now both teams are horrible. Again, is there anything worth watching?
Warriors at
Heat. One game.
Warriors at Heat?
If Chris Bosh is gone, not worth it.
Spurs at Jazz on Thursday? In the late game? Late game?
You're going to push the Jazz? Really? This is what you're reduced to? That's what a week off of basketball does to you?
Hey, the Lakers are on Friday on ESPN again.
Of course. Are they on ABC too? And then...
Did you watch Kobe versus Tim Duncan?
No.
For the last time?
No.
Give me a favorite Lakers-Spurs moment. Kobe era.
It would be... when what's his name buried the three at the end of the playoffs?
You're gonna have to help me out.
I can't.
Ori?
Yes.
Wait, that was against the Kings.
Black jersey. Close enough.
Derek Fisher, point four.
No, Derek Fisher.
Let me see. I'm trying to remember some a few of them. I remember Kobe beating him in 08.
This is for you and Criscuolo to have your Kobe crush in April.
You're outing me that Scott Criscuolo is going to be on the show for the Kobe special that you have voluntarily decided to exit.
I am defecting. I will be in April. I will be in Moscow. I'll be in Europe.
Hey, let's play the ABC Guess What Game It Is contest.
Okay.
You it's two Western Conference teams.
Let's see, Oklahoma City and the Warriors.
You got it. It's Golden State and Oklahoma City. Did you legitimately guess that?
Yeah, I just you already mentioned the Lakers that they're not on. So I'm like, okay, can't be them.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned San Antonio, can't be them.
Mm-hmm.
So who else are we showing?
And after that, I mean, it's a little bit of a messy schedule this year or this week. Nothing too like sexy this time. But it's going to be a little bit of a fun week. Are you glad to be kind of back in the mix?
Well, I'm glad it's back in the mix. You know, like I said, it was nice to have a week off where I don't have to keep checking, you know, people and, at home, you know,
and for all those fans, you know, we do have a part two for the small forward rankings. You know,
it's coming. Why are we so impatient? You know,
it's like when they found out Star Wars Episode 8 got delayed. It's like, no, I gotta wait 6 more months.
Yeah, oh, okay. Now you should boycott it now and not go see it. You know, yeah, whatever. No, it was like I said. Like I spent literally, you know, 2 to 3 hours at work just sitting reading NBA stats and history and. You know, just box scores, assorted box scores and stats and who's doing, you know.
Yeah.
So it was nice to have a week where I was just like, you know what, I can sit back and...
Was there anything you noticed where you said, huh?
No, just like the last week was just listening to the rumors. And I'm like, that rumor's false. That rumor's false.
The one that shocked me was that Magic are going to try to pursue Al Horford like you were talking about. That one surprised me.
Well, again, go after Drennan with Millsap. I'm like, I'm not surprised.
I just think the Hawks are kind of in that situation where it's getting a little. I'm trying to find the word. It's getting a little bit salty, where you can feel like where there's a chance that things might just come to an end.
Well, we may. You know, I'd always said Kyle Korver. Eventually, he's going to start slowing down. This seems to be the year, and that team is not the same. Mm-hmm. And you made zero good. Decisions to upgrade this year, getting Tim Hardaway Jr., who is maybe on the team still. I don't know.
Give me a prediction post All-Star break for the rest of the regular season. Something like a team.
Chicago misses the playoffs.
I think Washington makes the playoffs. That's mine.
Maybe they're the 8 and Chicago's the 9. Ooh.
Well, it's funny because the Bulls actually play the Wizards this week, so maybe that's the most interesting.
It'd be funny if they play the last game of the season for the 8th spot.
Well, you know how weird it is that they always work out that way every regular season, even though the schedule makers have no idea.
Well, yeah, you know, you have a shot playing all in conference, you know, in division games at the end.
Yeah, but no, the urgency's kicking in. It's fun. Now it actually feels like we actually have something to talk about, whereas we always spend every week on the podcast talking about, oh, there's really nothing to talk about. Well, now we actually have things to talk about, so it's going to get interesting as we go down the road. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We'll be talking to y'all next week. Take care, guys.
Small forward episode coming eventually. It's going to come.